The world is yours. Men have searched the earth, the air, even the sun and stars in their never-ending quest for knowledge. And now, in an NBC educational feature, the United States Department of the Interior Office of Education brings you the wonders of that unique establishment, the Smithsonian Institution, dedicated to the increase and diffusion of knowledge.
Here is a special announcement for all of our listeners. If you would like to receive a free booklet describing future World is Yours programs and suggested supplementary reading, simply write to The World is Yours, Washington, D.C. And now, the story of electricity. The Song of the Dynamo.
A brutal throbbing song of power from deep within the steel-sheathed innards of the dynamo. A roaring, quivering thing, it squats like a beast from another world. Black, round-bellied, roaring out in a song of power. A growling, rumbling, boastful song.
For this is the dynamo, giver of light, saver of lives, builder of civilization. Its bones are a mass of steel, and its heart is a maze of wire. A great network of wire through which courses the invisible lifeblood of the dynamo's body. Mysterious, ever-potent lifeblood that gives him strength to sing his song. Lifeblood used and reused in 1,000 dynamos. Captured and used to light 1,000,000 homes. Lifeblood to do the work of 1,000 men or to send the words of man across the ocean. Gift of the gods of creation, and man calls it electricity.
Electricity, what is it? Why is it? Where does it come from? Who discovered its marvelous powers? Who was the first man to enslave this mysterious force and give it to the world?
Here is the courtroom, dimmed by the shadows of years that hang about the shoulders of a figure high above us on the bench. His face is wrinkled with the wisdom of a man who has lived forever. This is time himself, and this is time's tribunal. The court of time, where man's right to immortality is judged. The court of time through whose portals every man must march, to be judged and take his seat beside the ancient figure, or to be cast forever into the pardonless dungeon of the unremembered. This is time's tribunal. Now the shadows fall away, and before the bearded figure on the bench stand 11 men. 11 men chosen from the thousands who have laid claim to the discovery and harnessing of this mysterious force, electricity. Theirs are the strongest claims to immortality. Now the bearded figure on the bench peers down at the men before him. His eyes sweep from one to another. A hush falls. Then, time speaks.
Yes, you are all familiar to me. I've watched you work. I've seen the light of discovery upon each of your faces. Each of you has toyed with this thing you call electricity. Yours are the voices of the past. You are the pioneers of electricity, come to lay your claims before the court of time.
Sir, may I speak?
You wear the clothing of a long dead people. What is your name?
I am Thales, a Greek, sir. Hundreds of years ago, I worked with electricity. Long before any of these other men were born.
Thales. Yes, I remember you. But were there none before you?
None, sir. 600 years before the birth of Christ, I discovered a marvelous force and gave it to man.
You gave name to electricity?
I did. It was I who first found that by rubbing an amber rod, it could be made to attract things to it. I captured electricity and startled the courts of ancient Greece with the wonderful effects of my discovery.
Indeed. But the name, electricity.
I stated that anything touched by my amber rod was amberized. In the words of these men, electrified. So, electricity.
You are a wise man, Thaley.
Thank you, sir.
But you did nothing with it. Is there someone who...
Aye, sir.
Your face is clouded with the shadows of time. Who are you?
Alas, I have long forgotten my name. Not my deed. I was not like Thales. I used electricity for the first time.
So? And when?
Again, I've forgotten exactly. About 1,000 years. Perhaps more. I invented the compass.
Compass? But we speak of electricity.
Is not a compass a magnetized needle? Is it not so that the point of the needle is drawn towards the north because of the attraction of the electricity there for the electricity in my needle?
Quite so. Let me see the crude compass you hold in your hand. An iron needle floating on a piece of wood in a bowl of water. Crude, but a wise discovery.
Thank you, sir.
But you did not harness electricity. You did almost exactly as Thales did. You rubbed your needle with a natural magnetized stone. You simply transferred the magnetism from the stone to the needle. The needle was bound to be drawn toward the north because of the magnetic field there.
But,
again, you did not see the relationship between magnetism and electricity. You left that to others.
Sir, may I speak?
Who are you?
My name is Pieter von Muschenbroek.
Dutch?
Yes. I am not so old as Thales and this other man. I lived much later, 1746.
And why did you step forward?
Because you told this man with the compass that he had not harnessed electricity. I did that for the first time.
Indeed. And how?
I captured electricity and stored it in a glass jar.
Your story must be an interesting one. Tell us about it.
I lived in Leiden, Holland. I taught there in the university. I had noticed many times that objects, when electrified, as Thales and this man had done, always lost their force after a time. It came upon me to store some of the force so that I might electrify anything when I wished. One day in the university, that was in 1746, my assistant and I placed our equipment before us and started.
Everything is ready, Professor.
Oh, good. A glass jar full of water, a wire from our amber rod through the jar cover and into the water. Good.
Shall I rub the rod?
Yes, on this cloth. If one electrified amber rod will attract little things toward it, think what we will be able to do with the force from a million amber rods.
But don't you think it's dangerous?
Perhaps. But once it is imprisoned in our bottle, how can it escape? This is a wonderful idea.
It is tiresome rubbing this amber rod.
Oh, forget your weariness. I will be back in a while to relieve you, Hunt. Well, I think we have done enough, Hunt. Our bottle must be full of electricity by now.
Shall I disconnect the wire from the jar?
Yes, do that. What will the students say when we tell them we have stored electricity in a jar?
But, Professor, how do we know we have?
Well, we will find out by trying to electrify some objects with the wire leading from the jar. Simple, eh?
Oh, there we are.
Good. Give me the jar.
Here. Oh! Professor! Are you hurt? What happened?
It bit me. It leapt at me like an animal.
What did?
The electricity in the jar. I simply touched the top of the jar and something shook my whole body. Here, help me up.
I can't understand it. You said that electricity couldn't escape.
Oh, never mind what I said. It did. I had no idea we were tampering with so dangerous a thing. Hunt, forget this experiment. Forget electricity. Never again will I touch anything that strikes like that. I store it and then it leaps out and attacks me. Never again. Never.
Oh, laugh if you want to. But it was my idea, and it worked even if it did turn on me.
He speaks the truth, gentlemen. His Leiden jar has been used by all of you. There is no doubt that he was the first ever to store electricity.
Thank you, sir.
But, like Thales and the man with the compass, you were content to end your work there. You were content to work with feeble little sparks from an amber rod. There was a man named Gray in England who saw more than feeble sparks. He added nothing more than a theory to the pages of history. But his theory was a good one. He compared those small sparks with thunder and lightning and was convinced that there was a similarity between the two. We know that to be true now. And he lived when you lived, Muschenbroek.
But he did not prove it, sir.
And Who are you?
My name is Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, yes, yes. I have heard of you. But what have you to say?
I admit that Gray discovered the similarity between the two. But it was really an ingenious guess. I proved it.
Indeed. And how?
I knew that there was a similarity between man-made electricity and the lightning in the skies because... But let me tell you my story. It happened in June 1752. Not many years after this Dutch gentleman invented the Leyden jar. I had been waiting for days for a good thunderstorm so that I might try my experiment. My equipment was all ready, and one afternoon it came.
Father, everything's ready.
Get the kite, son. Hurry while the storm is at its height.
All right.
Pull your coat about you and follow me to that shed over there. Come on.
Coming.
Give me the kite, Will.
Do you think we'll go up in all this rain, Father?
I don't see why not. There's plenty of wind.
Why have you got this wire sticking up from the crossbow, Father?
To capture the electricity the lightning throws in the air as it flashes. All right, throw the kite into the air.
All right. There she goes. Look at her rise.
Now tie the silk in her bow at the end of the kite string, Will. Here, I'll do it.
What's the door key for?
I'm going to tie it in with the bow, and then, well, we'll see.
Gosh, I can hardly see the kite now.
My son, look. Look at the kite string.
All the loose little pieces of string are standing out straight.
Like porcupine quills. Why, there's electricity in the string.
But where does it come from?
From the air. There's a great electrical disturbance there in the sky. That's why we see the lightning.
But how about the key at the end of the string and the silk bow?
Well, if I'm right, you'll see something very strange. Now watch. I'm going to touch my knuckle to the key.
Look, sparks jumping from the key to your knuckle.
Electricity, I'm right. Those sparks from my amber rod are the same as lightning in the sky. And that's how I made my discovery, sir. After that, I even stored electricity from the sky in Leyden jars.
A clever experiment, Franklin.
And from that experiment, I was able to invent the lightning rod.
And what did you do with the electricity after you obtained it, Franklin?
Well, I had planned to cook a dinner by electricity. I was going to kill a turkey with an electric shock from one of my jars. Roast it with an electric jack before a fire kindled by an electric bottle.
And did you do it?
No, I never did get around to doing it. You see, I was so busy in those years during the American Revolution that I just never had time.
But you did prove that lightning was the same as the electricity made by your static machine and the static machines of other men.
I did. And don't forget the lightning rod.
I'm not. But whether you know it or not, there was another lightning rod before you invented your iron one.
Sir?
You were it.
Eh?
Benjamin Franklin, when you drew electricity from the sky and made it jump from the key to your knuckles, you were acting as a human lightning rod.
Oh.
That you were not killed was one of the most remarkable cases of good luck on record.
Well.
Oh, wait now. Please don't look so hurt. Yours was a remarkable and very important experiment. No one can take that away from you.
Thank you, sir.
But what good did you make of the force you had harnessed? True, you stored it and carried on many valuable experiments. But you never tried to probe very deeply into the question of what it was or how it was produced. There was someone else.
You speak of Luigi, signor.
You are an Italian, are you not?
Yes, Luigi Galvani is my name. I lived during your same years that Franklin did.
And why did you step forward?
Because I heard you say that there was someone who tried to find out just what electricity was. That was I.
Indeed.
Yes. I couldn't understand why Franklin wasted his time flying kites and drawing electricity from the sky when it was all around us and easier to study here on the ground.
Franklin is scowling at you, Galvani.
Oh, I meant no offense. You see, I wasn't content with what everybody said about electricity and how it came about. I investigated for myself.
And?
I found out what electricity was.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, I had a friction machine similar to the one Franklin used in his experiments. You see, I used to toy with it in my spare moments. But most of the time, I worked on the bodies of animals, dissecting them and trying to find out what made their bodies function. That was my real work. Well, one day, I was working on the body of a frog in my laboratory. My assistant was standing beside me, toying with his static machine, which lay there on the dissecting table. Will you stop whirling that wheel and get those wires out of my way? They make me nervous.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, there. Now, the skin is off the frog's leg. Give me that knife. No, no. Yes, that's the one.
What are you going to do? Cut the ligament?
No, I want to see just how the frog can make that motion. Perhaps the nerve is still alive. Paul, did you see that?
The legs kicked.
Yes. When I touched the knife to the wire from a static machine.
What does it mean?
Turn that wheel again. Saints in heaven. Look at those legs kicked.
I can't understand.
I can. Don't you see, Paul? Why should those legs kick when they come into contact with electricity?
I don't know.
There is only one reason. If an electrical charge can make the legs of a frog kick as though they were alive, they must have been charged with electricity when they were alive.
Then?
Electricity must be the thing that makes us live. Electricity is life. I wrote many books on that, sir. In a few years, there were frog's legs kicking in every laboratory in Europe.
Hey, remarkable deduction, Galvani.
But untrue, sir. Untrue.
Who are you?
Volta is my name. Alessandro Volta. I lived when Galvani came out with that preposterous statement. I proved him to be wrong.
I proved that electricity was life. You were wrong, Volta.
I was not. I made electricity without using your frog's legs. A frog cannot make electricity.
I suppose you are going to come out with that preposterous statement of yours about metals creating electricity.
Yes, and it's true.
Gentlemen, please. Now, Volta, tell us about how you proved Galvani to be wrong.
Well, I had read all about Galvani's work, and I investigated.
Yes.
He explained in his writing that he had hung some frog's legs to an iron rod to stay overnight. He said that the hook he clipped to the frog's legs was copper, and when he hung it on the iron rod, the legs started to kick.
So?
He explained that by saying that the frog's legs were so fresh that there was still enough electricity in them to make them kick.
Ridiculous.
It was the copper contact of the copper hooks against the iron rod that made them kick.
But how are you so sure?
It was very simple. You see, I took some silver coins and some zinc discs of the same size, piled them alternately on top of each other. First silver, then zinc, and so forth, with moist cloth separating each coin from the other.
Yes, and then?
Well, the rest was easy. I fastened one wire to the top of the pile and one to the bottom. And when I joined the wires together, I had, for the first time in history, a steadily flowing current of electricity. And no frog's legs.
Well, I'm afraid he did prove how wrong you were, Galvani. Yes, Volta? You created for the first time something capable of creating a steady flow of electricity.
Batteries, they call them now, don't they?
Yes, and your name has been immortalized. Do you know that now the unit of measure of the strength of the current in a battery or anything else is called the volt?
Is that so? I'm honored.
Yes, and you should be. You see, Volta, all these men before you, Thales over there, Franklin, our Dutch friend with the Leyden jar, and all the other thousands who experimented with electricity before you, they knew of no steady current of electricity such as you had created. Their work was done with static electricity, feeble sparks, capable of very little work.
Yes, I know that.
You see, the world has little use for static electricity. Men cannot light electric lamps or run streetcars or electric motors without a steady flow of electricity. Your battery was a valuable contribution to mankind.
Thank you, sir.
But I'm afraid your battery wasn't enough, Volta. With your battery, you opened up an entirely new field of knowledge. Discoveries came so swiftly that your discovery was soon left behind, but not dimmed in importance, understand.
May I have a verb, sir?
Who are you?
Ørsted is my name. Hans Christian Ørsted.
Danish.
Yeah. I knew Volta here. Then you mentioned something about the discoveries that followed his. I thought it was time to step forward.
And what was it you discovered, Ørsted?
The relationship between magnetism and electricity.
Indeed. A very valuable discovery, Ørsted. How did you do it?
Well, I had noticed for years the similarity between the separate accomplishments of magnetism and electricity. A stone magnet would draw things to it. So would an electrified amber rod, in exactly the same manner. I noticed that.
Yes?
I investigated. I experimented for years. Finally, one day in my laboratory, I did what I wanted. I made a magnetic compass needle spin around and around when I passed a wire with an electric current in it over the needle.
Very interesting. But what did that prove?
It proved that the current in the wire attracted the end of the needle. And because the needle was attached to the base, it couldn't be drawn to the wire, and instead it just spun around.
Remarkable. And, of course, the current was supplied by one of Bolta's batteries.
Oh, of course. But no one had ever thought before to link magnetism and electricity together. That is important.
Certainly. Motors of dynamos could not function without knowledge of the connection between magnetism and electricity. Yours was an epoch-making discovery.
Thank you, sir.
But that is as far as you went. You had the principle in mind, but principles do no good unless they're used.
That's what I thought, sir. I used Urchin's discovery to advantage.
Oh? And what is your name?
Michael Faraday, sir. I lived in London. That's where I learned about this discovery. 1831, that was.
Well, perhaps you'd better tell us how you used Oersted's discovery to advantage, as you say.
Well, I heard about Oersted, as I told you, and after much investigation, I built myself a machine. One day a friend called on me in my laboratory as I was working on it. It was a cold night, and when he opened the door, a gust of wind swept through my laboratory.
Hello, Michael. I said, hello, Michael.
Oh, hello, Ralph.
Michael, you look terrible. If you don't get some sleep instead of staying up all night in this stuffy old laboratory...
There we are. All set to go.
Are you listening to me? As usual, no. Say, what's this, a new gadget? An ordinary magnet with a copper disc hung between the prongs. What's it for?
Experiment. You see, this thin copper disc turns on an axle here. The framework is arranged so that when I turn the handle on the wheel, the copper disc rotates between the prongs of the magnet.
I hate to be ignorant, but what of it?
Here, I'll show you. You turn the handle so that the copper disc rotates between the prongs of the magnet.
All right.
Now, notice anything?
Yes. This wheel, it's stuck or something.
It turns hard, doesn't it?
Yes.
Now, watch. I'll take the magnet away from the wheel. Now we have nothing but a copper disc turning around.
Why, it turns very easily now.
And now I'll let the disc turn within the prongs of the magnet again.
Why, it seems to be tight again. What's holding it back, Michael?
Electricity, Ralph.
You mean electricity flows between the prongs of the magnet?
Exactly. There's electricity in the magnet.
But I don't see.
Magnetism is electricity. Oersted proved it, and now I've proved it.
But how do you know?
Look, see these wires leading from my copper disc to this instrument?
Yes.
That instrument is so constructed that it can detect the presence of an electric current. Now they'll turn the copper disc again.
Yes.
Now look at the needle on that galvanometer.
Why? It's bobbing back and forth.
Exactly. There's electricity flowing through those wires leading from the copper disc. And that electricity comes from the magnet. Magnetism, Ralph, is electricity.
Did you know then, Faraday, you had constructed the first electric dynamo?
Of course. But my experiment so fascinated me that I just watched it over and over again for months.
A machine capable of pouring electricity through wires and into a mechanical device.
Exactly.
To do what?
I had invented a machine that really made Earth's discovery amount to something.
So you did. So you did. There would be no generators, no motors, if it had not been for you. It was a stroke of genius, Faraday.
Thank you, sir.
But your device was capable of no work by itself. You had discovered the principle of generating current. But you had not made a motor as man knows motors today.
I did that, sir. I invented the motor.
Ah? And what is your name?
Graham is my name, from Belgium. I invented the electric motor in 1873.
Yes. You played an important part in improving upon Faraday's work, Graham.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Now, may I speak, sir?
Who are you?
Edison is my name. Thomas Alva Edison. I really gave mankind the marvelous lighting effects of electricity. I invented the incandescent lamp.
Yes, I know. How did you ever come to think of it, Edison?
Well, it was hard, but I knew my basic idea was right. I knew that if I could find a material that would glow from the heat of the electricity flowing through it and not burn, I could have a continuous display of light. Well, I finally found the material. It was, you'll laugh at this, paper.
But paper burns.
Of course, but not when it is placed in a partial vacuum. Heated so that it turns to carbon and then sealed in a glass globe from which the air is exhausted, it glows. My first lamp glowed for 8 minutes before winking out.
Now look what mankind has done with your incandescent lamp.
And in addition, sir, I invented the complete system of distributing electricity from central stations. I designed new and efficient dynamos and devised a proper network of conductors to supply current to every corner of a city.
You did indeed make a great contribution to mankind, Edison.
Thank you, sir.
Well, you are the last of the 11 men, Edison. You all look hopefully toward me. But don't you see, gentlemen, there can be no decision. All of you have made invaluable contributions to electricity. Each of you deserves as much credit as the other. But there are those now living who have gone far beyond you. Any day, any minute, frontiers undreamed of may be discovered. Was it you, Franklin, that said that electricity was a colorless, weightless, invisible fluid? It was you. If you only knew how mankind laughs at that now. And you, Galvani, saying electricity was life itself. Even more preposterous in these times. Oh, I see the hurt looks on your faces. But you'd laugh at those theories yourselves if you could see the advances that have been made since your time. You, Thales, when you played with that simple little amber rod, little did you know what a force you had discovered. And von Muschenbroek, when you first stored electricity in your jar of water, you were storing a power that would someday mold a civilization. Yet you treated it as a plaything and discarded it when it fit you. And you, Franklin, with your kite, and Galvani with your imaginative theory, elementary and outmoded now, but important then. Volta with your battery, the first battery. Oersted and your theory, the theory that revolutionized the entire field of electricity and prepared the way for Faraday and Edison and the rest of you. What would mankind have done without every one of you?